In recent months, there has been a trend that has gone around social media. It's called, I was today years old. Now what happens in this particular trend is that you will be given a picture of something familiar. Something that you probably see in everyday life, have seen even hundreds, maybe thousands of times, and it will reveal something brand new to you that you never noticed before. And when you notice it, you have to admit, I was today years old when I learned blank. So I thought, because I knew I was going to tell you some of the sad things, we should have a little fun. Is that okay? If your life is good, don't leave thinking sad. Like, we're fine. But let's have a little fun today. Let's see what you know. So the first one, here you go, Mike. Did you know in the Amazon logo, or had you noticed before, that there is an arrow from the A to Z representing that Amazon sells everything from A to Z? So how many of you already knew that? How many of you learned that for the first time today? So you would say, I am today years old. Now the bad part of it is some of you have enough boxes that were sent to your door at Christmas time. How you missed it, I don't know. It's okay. I didn't see it either. How about this next one? Chick-fil-A. Karen, this is for you. You know every chance I get to talk about Chick-fil-A, I'll do it. If you order chicken nuggets and it's on the go, it's designed so that you can set it on top of your cup and still have access to your drink.
No.
How many of you knew this? How many of you learned it for the first time? You were today years old. All right, how about the next one? How about you know that pizza boxes, or at least I think that looks like Domino's maybe, is designed for the top lid to fold underneath so that it forms a stand so that the greasy hot pizza doesn't sit on your countertop. How many of you knew this? Now, I know what's going to happen. Some of you are going to say, I tried it and it didn't work. Well, this box works. That's what I know. How many of you learned it for the first time today? You were today years old. How about this one? The Staples logo. How many of you knew that the L was actually a staple that's half opened? How many of you knew? So you knew that for today. How many of you for the first time? Yeah. I was today years old. And how many times have you seen this? That's the crazy part, isn't it? We have two more. I threw this one in for my wife. A Starbucks cup, she tried it yesterday. Is that actually if you take the top of the lid off, the middle circle is designed for your cup to sit down on top of it and to be a cup holder. How many of you knew that? One? Yeah. You don't need to go to Starbucks, it's fine. So all of us, most of us learned that for the first time today. We were today years old. How about this last one? Tostitos. Did you know that the two T's represent people and the top of the I is salsa and they're eating chips and salsa? How many of you knew this? Yep. How many of you learned it for the first time today? You were today years old. All right. Well, thanks for having some fun with me today. What you experienced then in the last few moments is if you experienced something brand new for the first time that you maybe had seen or familiar with, but you saw something that you had never noticed before, you have experienced an epiphany. Now, an epiphany is not a word that we use very often. In fact, we seem to limit it to a brand new idea, something we never knew, that time where the light bulb goes off, where everything finally makes sense for the very first time. We would say, ooh, I have an epiphany. And if you're like me, you don't say that very often. But actually, the Bible, when it talks about epiphany, doesn't use the word, so it's the Christian church, the Christian calendar, will talk about epiphany being the time that the Magi came from the east following a star to Bethlehem. It begins the season of epiphany. Now, had I been here last week, the text on the sermon schedule was Matthew chapter 2, where the wise men come from the east because God showed them an epiphany with the star in the sky. And if you didn't know this, here's a little bit of the sermon, but I won't preach at all, is that Jesus was probably 2 or 3 years old by the time the Magi arrived. They never made it to the Nativity because they came so far, and so it was this continual revealing of God to the Magi before they came. and they worshiped. But the word epiphany actually means this. You see it there for you on the screen. The word epiphany means to reveal something that is hidden. And it's not hidden because we have an inability to see it. It's hidden because we don't know how to look. So just like those things that I showed you, you may have seen something that you've looked at 100 times, but now because you've seen it, you will never not be able to see it, will you? In fact, some of you will now try and show how smart you are to other people this week and say, "Did you know?" Because once you see it, you can't unsee it. It is a revelation, and so it's not hidden, it's just hidden in plain sight. There's this other part that is revealed to us. Now the word that Paul uses in Ephesians chapter 3 is not the word epiphany, it is the word mystery. He used it 3 times in 10 verses. Now, you and I know a thing or two from literature about mystery. Do any of you like reading a good mystery book or watching a good mystery novel? Or, you know, on Netflix there's all these mysteries on innocent people and all of these things in prison. It's all about mystery. We know what a good mystery is. And we know the gospel, and what we would say to the Apostle Paul today is that the Apostle is not one of them. You see, a mystery is unpredictable. There's twists and there's turns. There's no peace to it. It's always in process. There's problems that need solved. And the gospel is none of that. The gospel is a gospel of peace, isn't it? "For I bring you good news of great joy for all the people. A Savior has been born, and they peace on earth to men." It's a gospel of peace. It's a gospel that doesn't create problems. It's a gospel that's supposed to solve our problems. And so we say, Paul, the gospel is not a mystery as we know a mystery. But what Paul would say is that there's a part of the gospel of Jesus Christ that is often hidden from us. It's not hidden because we don't have the ability to see it, as if God is keeping something from us. It's because we've been taught certain ways to look at things, and because we can only see it one way, we never see the fullness of the gospel. And so the purpose of the gospel is that it reveals itself to us. You see, something was happening in Paul's day that made the gospel a mystery. You see, every time the gospel was preached, it didn't bring peace, it brought persecution. Every time the gospel was preached, more and more people were receiving it. But that created a problem because the church people said, no, they ain't good enough to receive the gospel. And so it created more problems than it was solving problems. And so everything in Paul's day was all in upheaval when it came to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so the more the gospel was proclaimed, the more problems it caused. But then one day, Paul, who is only known as Saul, had an epiphany. He was on the Damascus Road when suddenly the sun began to shine in a way it had never shone before, and it captured his attention in a way that he couldn't look away, and he stared directly into the light so long that it blinded him. And you know, when you lose one of your senses, what they tell us is that all the other senses of your body are heightened so that you can understand what's going on around you. And because he couldn't see, I think it's funny that he had an epiphany that he couldn't see. Sometimes we have to be blinded in order to receive something a different way, because now he was heightened to the voice that came from heaven, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" And he says, "Lord, who are you?" I've always laughed. Paul, you just said, "Lord, who are you?" You already answered your own question. And he said, "I am Jesus of Nazareth, the one that you are persecuting." And here's what he received. That you will not just preach to the Jews, the insiders, the people of God. You will preach to outsiders too, the Gentiles. You will not just preach to the people who have their life together. In fact, you will now preach to a people who have no knowledge of God, who are wicked in every way, who are dogs, is how Jews would have portrayed to him. And Paul has this epiphany along the way. You see, the problem is that the gospel Paul knew was nothing like the one Jesus was now showing him in this epiphany. The one Paul knew was full of rules about how people are supposed to come to God. So it tells you everything about how to be a good human being, the gospel he knew, the gospel of the Old Testament. It was about how you should worship, and consequently, how you shouldn't worship. How you should dress and should not dress. What you should eat and what you should not eat. Who you should hang out with and who you shouldn't hang out with. It's all these rules on how to be a godly human being. Here's the problem with the only gospel he knew. All the rules were about how people come to know God. But the gospel that Jesus was trying to reveal is that that is no gospel at all. That the gospel of Jesus Christ is about how God comes to know people. I'm going to preach this thing whether you want me to or not. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not about how much faith in Him you have. The gospel of Jesus Christ is about how much faith He has in you. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ is not based on how much you love Him. It is based according to how much He loves you. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not based on how much you give Him in the offering plate or with your time. It is about how much He has given you. It's not about how we come to know Him. It's about the fact that He has come to know us. Why do you think we sang the songs we sang? Because I thought they were just randomly picked? No, did you hear all of them? They were about God coming to us, not about us coming to Him. Here is our King who has come to bring us back to Him. That's all of Him. It's just us responding to what He is doing. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ. I get a little wishy-washy. I know the teens won't like this with that second song, Reckless Love. There's some parts on all my education says, but it's a good song because you know what it's about? It's about the love of God coming after us, not about our love coming after Him. And oh, that sweet old hymn, Amazing Grace. It's not about our good works. It's about His grace coming for us. That is the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Someone say amen. Amen. So what are you trying to communicate today, preacher? Here's very simply this. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by what limits us. That's good enough to preach. If you check out here, that's fine. But for those of you who want a little bit more gravy on the steak, I'll give it to you. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by what limits us. So what are the things that limits us? The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by the problems that limit us. Ooh, that's profound, preacher. I know, you're glad you came to church today. Do you hear what Paul said? For this reason, I, Paul, the prisoner of Christ Jesus. Do you know why Paul was in prison? In fact, I did a little research of about the 13 letters Paul is accredited to, about 25% of them, not quite a quarter of them, Paul wrote from a prison cell. Here's what's so ironic to me. Paul was proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ, so the Romans threw him in jail so that he would stop proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it was because they threw him into jail that he was able to write letters that reached more people than if they just would have let him preach in the first place. What does that tell me? Even though he was limited, what he was limited by did not limit the gospel of Jesus Christ. You see, you can be in a prison cell and be more free than if you were walking the street. You can go through suffering and difficulty and have more joy than if everything was the way you planned it out to be. Because the gospel is not limited by what limits us. You can go through the saddest, most heartbreaking things, and that's what Sarah and I felt like we've walked through recently. But I can tell you something. I felt the presence of God closer to me in those darkest, struggling times than other times in my life because the gospel is not limited by what limits us. In fact, it comes and shatters the limitations we place upon it and say, ooh, this is good news of Jesus Christ. Some of you are in problems and you don't see the way out. So what's my word? You may not get out of the problems, but know the gospel of Jesus Christ will not be limited, will not be contained, will not be stopped, will not be hindered by the problems that you are facing. You will still have the joy, the peace, the freedom, the love that only God Himself can give. I do want to make one clarification here. There's a difference between limitations and liabilities. So a limitation is something we cannot control. But a liability is something that we choose. It's something that we're responsible for. Someone will look at our life and say, well, you're a liability because of blank, blank, blank. Liabilities are often something that we clean up. So if you go to apply for a loan, and I'm in the middle of looking at Dave Ramsey, so I'm hesitant to say it, you have to apply, and if you have too many debts, what will they say? You have too many liabilities. So what do you have to do? You have to clean up some debt so that you can get the loan that you need or what you're applying for. In other words, the liability is your responsibility. Don't confuse the limitation with liability. Because sometimes what we hear is that the gospel is not limited by the things that limit us. But sometimes the things that limit us are our own liabilities that we have to choose to do something with. You know, what I hear all the time and say all the time is time. I don't have enough time. Incorrect. We all have the same amount of time. We just choose how we do it. It's a liability. It's something we choose. You don't have enough money? Congratulations, I don't either. And yet somehow I don't go hungry. Did you feel like you don't have enough money? Congratulations, that's part of it. But money is not a limitation. It's a liability. It's how we choose to steward it that makes the difference. So I just want to be clear. The gospel is not limited by either one. But I just want to be careful. Sometimes we think we're in prison, and in all reality, we're the ones who put ourselves there and we have the key to get out of it. So I just want to take away some of our excuses, because every single one of us has a... And realize sometimes the liability that is trying to limit our life is on us. God will help us. But recognize there are situations where we cannot choose them differently. We can't make them stop. We can't get rid of them. Either one, the gospel of Jesus Christ will shatter. Amen. Is that good news? That's good news. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by the parameters that limit us. You see, parameters are things that are placed upon us by other people. So Paul writes, verse 6, that the mystery is that through the gospel, the Gentiles are heirs together with Israel, members together of one body. This is the insiders and the outsiders club. What was happening is the Jews were saying that the Gentiles couldn't be part of them because they didn't act like them, they didn't look like them. They placed parameters on them. Do people ever place parameters on you? Oh, come on. And we're in a world where people want to act like racism and sexism and nationalism don't exist anymore, but it does. Some of you have been more than qualified for a position you applied for and you got passed over because someone placed parameters on you that were not parameters that were fair. Let's ask another question. Have you ever placed parameters on other people? I know what we want to say, no. But what is true of all of us, yes. We all come with judgments of other people, of prejudices. We think to ourselves, they'll never accept my invitation to church. You see how jacked up their life is? They'd never step foot in, and so we never ask. We think to ourselves, that person's marriage is really good, and we look to their marriage, and the truth is, your marriage is a lot better than theirs. They just hide it. And you think they don't need church. You think that they don't need you to encourage them. You're waiting on encouragement from them. They may be the ones who are needing encouragement because we place these parameters on people. Here's what I'm telling you. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by the parameters that are placed on people. The gospel of Jesus Christ is an invitation for all people. And actually, my understanding is that almost all theological camps believe that. Some just, when others don't accept it, that's when different theologies come into place. And that's okay. But for the most part, we don't know who will accept it and who won't. That's what we agree upon. That the gospel is for all people. Because it doesn't know parameters. It doesn't know social class. It doesn't know the color of skin. It doesn't know if you're a refugee or not. It doesn't know if you're an immigrant or not. It doesn't know if you're from the United States of America or not. You are a person, and so if you are a living human being, the gospel of Jesus Christ is for you. It's not limited by the things that limit us. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by our own prerequisites. Verse 7, Paul said, I became a servant of this gospel by the gift of God's grace given to me through the working of His power, though I am less than the least of all of God's people. You know what Paul was qualified to do? Preach to the Jews, the insiders. So you know where God sent him to preach? To the Gentiles, the outsiders. Where Paul was strongest, God sent him in the other way. You see, what so often happens for all of us is we start making excuses. I'm not gifted in that. Yep, that's probably why He's calling you. God very rarely calls you to your greatest strength, but He will always call you through your greatest weakness. Because if it's through your greatest strength, people might be confused. They might think it's your gift or ability that gives you the power to do it and not the gospel. But when you use your greatest weakness, they will say, man, you bad at that, but somehow it worked. There must be a power that doesn't belong to you. Did you know that by heart, I'm an introvert? You should have seen me when I first started preaching. It's funny. Because I've become more of an extrovert than ever before. Because God placed me in something not that I was comfortable in, but was probably the weakest at. In fact, I still get that way. You put me in a room full of people that I don't know, guess where I'll be? I'll be in that back corner. What I'm telling you is that so often we limit what the gospel wants to do because we list all these prerequisites of why we're not qualified. Except if the gospel is what we believe it is not limited by the things we don't feel qualified for. I would tell you this, if you knew how many times I felt inadequate for the job that you've given me, you would fire me today on the spot. But I think it's the moment that we start feeling adequate that God will either move us or we've stopped allowing Him to use us. To say, God, I don't know how to make this decision. I need You. And the gospel says, that's all that I want. It's about allowing us to let His gospel work in our life. The gospel of Jesus Christ, the last one, is not limited by the perils of the church or the perils you have of the church. Verse 10 says, His intent was that now through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known. It is the purpose of the Church of Jesus Christ to reveal the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world. You are God's plan for the world. There's no other plan. This may sound like a tangent, and it probably is. I'm about sick and tired of hearing all of the problems people have with the church. It's not because the problems aren't there. It's not because most of the time people are probably right about the problems of the church. But here's what I found myself doing. I found myself starting to believe not that long ago that a church can't be successful in a culture that we are currently in a post-Christian culture. People don't seem interested in it. People think the church is just full of hypocrites, and we've talked about that, and people think that they don't need church. And here's what I was reminded. The gospel is not of Jesus Christ is not limited by the things that limit the church. We, the church, are limited. We are imperfect. We don't get it right every single time. We're guessing some of the time. Guessing is sometimes a fancy way to think we're trying to discern the will of the Lord, but we are not 100% certain. We are just doing our best. Here's what I was reminded of last week when we went to Northside Community Church. Do you remember that church? Nate Denning came and spoke about a church plant on the north side of Evansville, so we went, and he preached a message of about temptation, except here's what it was, that we're tempted to give up. That sermon may not have been for anybody else, but it was for this preacher who started to listen to all of the problems people have with the church. Here's what I declare today, that the gospel of Jesus Christ is not limited by the perils of the church. The gospel of Jesus Christ often works despite our problems. But here's what I know. If people don't need the church and think church isn't important, then Jesus Christ died for nothing because He died to establish His church. And He said, on this rock I will build my church. And so if we declare that He is the Christ, He is the Messiah, He is who He says He is, there is no power of hell that can stop the beauty of the church being able to change and transform lives. I'm not worried anymore about losing people or people getting upset over this or that. I love you. I will do everything I can for you. But I am reminded that it's time to quit playing games, that the gospel of Jesus Christ is at stake. I've done too many funerals here lately and looked too many family members in the eye where I don't know where they stand, and I'm tired of it. And I've just declared the gospel of Jesus Christ won't be stopped by any of this. Persecute me, fire me, be mad at me, whatever it takes. We will be revealers of God's glory in the world. What would happen if we started to live our life according to a limitless gospel? Because that's what it is. I was thinking about this. Praise band, go ahead and come. We're closed. It always helps me close sooner when the band's coming. Do you remember when cell phone plans first came out? Limited minutes, and you best not go over them minutes. And then texting became a thing, and we all said, oh, we'll never need unlimited texting, and then it was unlimited texting. And then we had internet access on our phones, and we said, oh, we can have a limited plan. We will never need an unlimited plan. Except now, what do they sell you on? Unlimited this. Unlimited that. Church, on this side of heaven, we have access to an unlimited gospel. There is nothing that can stop it. What if we started to live that way? I think if one person lived that way, understanding we have a limitless gospel at our disposal, that it would change the world. But what would happen if an entire church started living, not out of fear of what we're limited by, but out of faith in what we have an unlimited access of? Oh, it would change and transform a community. The best days for the church would be ahead of us and not behind us. And I believe that with all of my heart. But I do want to say one thing, and I'm breaking every homiletical rule. You're not supposed to end on a bad note. But I do want to say this. The gospel will only become limited, not to us, but it will become limited when this world is over to those who never received it. This is what's at stake. So here's what I'm asking today. We're just going to sing a song. If you believe in the unlimited merit of the gospel, and your prayer for this year is, God, help me to reveal that gospel in every way, through my actions, through my words, through any disposal of my life, would you just come forward and stand, and we'll close that way? Can we do that? All right, let's stand together and let's sing.